You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy Monday, everybody. Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers, as always. My name is Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes in the West, Indianapolis Community News, and join me on the other line to finally talk about an actual Pacers basketball game for the first time in 4 months-ish. Former Indy Cornrows writer extraordinaire Adam Friedman. Adam, first of all, how's it going?
Pretty good. Better than the Pacers' loss on Saturday night. Disappointing, right? They lost the game.
They were up double digits when they pulled their normal rotation, and I care very little about the final score of this game.
Oh, but I thought these games mattered, Tony.
My gosh. It's fun to like nitpick because we haven't seen basketball in forever, but I mean, yeah, none of this stuff will really materialize or be able to have strong opinions on them until the regular season obviously starts. But we can talk about it. We can analyze the beginning of the Bjorkgren era. We can look at some players and see what can change going forward, if anything. So let's start with Bjorkgren, because that's kind of the story of the Pacers, right? Kalen Cooper tweeted this out, that the Pacers are kind of hyping him up a lot on social media and stuff. And I think that's kind of, to me, because he's like their free agent acquisition, right? They didn't change any of their roster, so it's all Bjorkgren. Yeah. That's the change, right? So the story of the first game to me was, how different are they going to look? What's he going to say? What's he going to do? And is he going to follow through on the things we've heard about him all summer, right? Because, you know, McMillan didn't always make the dud decisions, even when he would say he would. And, you know, we heard a lot of stuff from him that never actually happened. So getting that trust with a coach, for me as a media person, was exciting. So first and foremost, the number that jumps out and will be the story that I'm going to be watching for a long time: they played fast and shot a lot of threes, which McMillan said that, and they never did it. And Bjorkgren said it, and in his first game, they did it. 44 threes, Adam, would be a franchise record in his first game as the coach.
Yeah, that was the most obvious thing from the beginning, was just the free range ability of everybody just to take a three whenever they wanted to.
Early shot clock.
Yeah.
The thing is, too, very few of them, I was like, that's a bad shot. You know what I mean? I was like, oh, why'd he take that? Very few of them. They were all like quick moving the ball, and then bam, they would get it up.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of almost the McMillan idea of, if you have an open shot, take it. But this, instead of hunting for the 18-footer, you hunt for the 23-footer.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah, I have a clip on my Twitter, if you want to go look at it, of Miles gets it for his first made three, and he catches at the top of the key. And what he would do under McMillan is he would turn and either throw it to the opposite wing, or he would throw it right back to whoever threw it to him or whatever. This time he fakes a pass, dribbles to the right, and just drills a three. I was like, wow, Miles already evolving in his
Well, you have to think he is going to have the biggest opportunity to like grow in this system, because
possibly
it feels like, I guess, I mean, what I mean by that is it with McMillan, it felt like he was always like, you have the ball in your hands, get rid of the ball to somebody, or try, you know what I mean? It was never like, and there was never like a, here's a play for you, Miles. Maybe the occasional like pick and pop, basically, especially with him and Darren Collison, but it always feels like with him, it's kind of like, try to avoid the ball in his hands, where it seems like with Bjorkgren, it's like, here, Miles, you get the ball, just shoot. You're a good 3-point shooter, just shoot, man. Just keep shooting. Like, don't worry about anything else. Just take a shot if you're open, basically. And it didn't seem like he had that free range under McMillan before, at least.
Yeah, Brogdon, too, took 7 threes. Justin Holiday took 7 threes. And a lot of those were in the corner, too. They do just do a quick pistol action, throw it to the corner, boom, take it. Like, that happened a lot. McDermott took 5. Vic and Miles Will took 4. I mean, Sabonis took 3. He missed them all. I still don't buy that he should be taking more than, like, 1 a game. But other than him, I think everybody got close to the number they should be at. Keelan Martin actually took 6. And he only played the fourth quarter. But, yeah, they got him up, and that's going to be what Bjorkgren wants. Asked after the game if that was, like, a number he aspires to get, he said, yeah, he likes that number. And then when Brogdon was asked about the 44 attempts, he said, I can see some games where we get up even more than that. So the Pacers are going to smash some franchise records this season for three-pointers.
Yeah, so I think the thing with Sabonis is – he has to shoot enough threes where it makes teams at times guard him on the perimeter. Now, I know with his passing ability, he's probably even going to be picked up that on top of the key a lot of times anyways, but he has to sort of make it like worth the team thinking about, do I go out after him, right? Like, yeah. If you don't shoot at all, then you give him, you know, the 8 feet of space. I mean, and then the thing I worry too is with Vic is, does he take too many of those pull-up threes, because he gets a tendency to sort of instead of drive and whatnot, with him in a minute, just to take a kind of a three-point shot that he's not, you know, he's never been like a crazy good three-point shooter, right? At least like Brogdon and Holiday, McDermott all have 40% seasons under them.
Yeah.
I think Vic's highest 38, and that was that 17-18 season. But he can be very streaky too, right? There's sometimes we can go like 3 of 5 or 5 of 7 and the next night be 0 of 8, right? And so it's just, I worry with him is he might be too reliant on taking a pull-up three because of his body and whatnot, but those are the only the two parts that I'm really concerned about with taking that many threes. Overall, the percentages say just keep taking them and you'll win more games probably.
Yeah, we could talk about Sabonis too because like we never really talked about this as a storyline, but he hadn't played in almost 300 days, right? So just to see him and see what he was like was a pretty big and nice deal and picked up right where he left off. We'll get to that next segment. The other thing, the pace, we pushed a lot after makes and misses. They were picking up full court. He always talked about, Bjorkgren did in his media sessions, you know, every new reporter hopping into a Zoom call for the first time would kind of ask for some insight on his style. And when it would come to defense, he would say disruptive. And, man, I mean, some similar stuff to what we saw from the old Pacers, you know, Miles doing a good job corralling guards off screens. I think Bjorkgren did a good job of not changing too much of what Miles is good at. I know I was worried he wouldn't get to do as much drop coverage, but some other stuff, they were just so aggressive on the ball and shrinking the court at the elbows and things like that that weren't really as much the case in the Dan Burke era of Pacers defense. And it's exhausting. It's a lot of work to play defense like this. I asked Brogdon straight up after the game if it's tiring. He was like, yeah, I mean, it's tough. And especially on a short training camp, right? Getting in, being in shape to do that is so crazy. That's why the Pacers spent so much of the beginning of training camp focused on defense, is because the way Bjorkman plays defense is really in your face, really aggressive, and it's exhausting.
Yeah, and that's what I wonder if that will hold up as the season goes on. I mean, we've seen it in the past, but the Pacers will come out 1 year and play a really high pace for like 3 or 4 games, and then eventually they'll kind of settle back into like the more – like I think even that first year at Vic, that very first game against Brooklyn took like 140 points, right? They don't really ever touch that.
If they're shooting early shot clock threes, their pace is going to be top 10.
Yeah, I know, and their pace will be higher, but I'm saying at some point do they – because it's such high intensity to play that way for a full season, do they sort of pull back and have to figure out some kind of balance between like having a very good half court D? Because that's the thing, the Pacers, and maybe different coaching will be better, but like the Pacers, it's like every season would come out playing really fast, and then they would make a sacrifice of speed to have better defense, right? And I think that like you can kind of see the trend of that each of the seasons, where they'll, you know, have a really mediocre defensive average the first, you know, 5-10 games, but as you get to 25-30 games, all of a sudden they're top 5, top 10 like they've been every year. So I do wonder what they figure out there, especially playing almost every other night the entire season. That's going to be hard. But I think just offensive efficiency wise, if they can just improve their offensive rating by like a point or two, they jump from being, I think, in the bottom, you know, third of the league to the top third of the league, just like that. And they keep the defense in somewhere in that range, and they become like a more elite level team.
Yeah, their offensive rating specifically in this one game, which again, no sweeping generalizations from one game. On possessors that didn't have a turnover, was probably really good. They had 24 turnovers because they worked on offense for about one day in the 2 weeks leading up to this, basically. Heavily, at least, instilling sets and things like that, but very sloppy basketball game.
Yeah,
I mean that was the most turnovers I've seen in one basketball game in my life. There were 50 turnovers.
Yeah, so like last year, the Pacers' offensive rating was 110. If they were at 112, well, they were 110.9, right? So they improved by a single point, which is not easy to do. They jumped from being 19th, I believe, to being 12th or 13th in the league, right? And that's with combined with this defense they had, that's like becomes, you come close to being an elite level team when you have, you know, if you're top 10 in both, you start pushing to be probably a top 3 or 4 seed in the conference each year.
Right. The last thing with Bjorkgren I wanted to get to, and this one's kind of tougher because there's a minutes cap on everybody, is the rotation and the choice to play Aaron as a starter and Warren instead. McMillan did that in the bubble, but you know, Bjorkgren talking about his emphasis, or at least more so, on development and playing youth than McMillan had. It was nice to see him make that choice. You know, I like McDermott as a starter for fit reasons, but picking, you know, the duh good young player makes a lot of sense. And then the minutes distribution, this is not going to be real because they all had a minutes cap, right? McDermott will not lead the team in minutes during the regular season. But we did see the 9 guys, we would, or I guess the 8 guys in this case, we would expect with Warren out to play a lot. Oh, Goga was out too, but with Warren and Goga out to play a lot, they all did play a lot. So it seems like the pecking order is in similar order than it was last year.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, they didn't make any changes on their you know, except for coaching, they didn't make any changes. So I don't like. We even saw the Sabonis with the bench unit a decent amount. Yep. Or some kind. I think I'm not sure Aaron Holiday was out there the entire time because he started obviously. So they were adjusting on that end. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think we'll see actually the rotations be that much different. You might see.
I disagree. I was going to say.
Well, so here's what I mean by that. I think overall, you might see some tweaking in terms of like trying to get a second starter with Sabonis out there.
Yes.
But I think overall though, like you're going to see the Sabonis thing, the major lineup thing last year where he would always come out a little earlier, play with the bench. You'll see that still. They'll try to get him with the as much as possible. They might try to, depending on how they feel with this Brogdon and Oladipo, try to stagger them a tiny bit to get one of them more minutes by themselves, probably Oladipo in that sense.
Yeah. I don't know what's real and not from the rotation again. We'll have to wait till the season for that, but there were a lot of subs, right? Even in the first half, when he only played his rotation guys and the third quarter, I guess. Sumner snuck in there and Cassius Stanley snuck in there. But when he was only playing his rotation guys, right, he's just subbed a lot. Like, there was a lot of mixing and matching, and he did that in camp. So I didn't know if that would be a thing that happens in the game. And then on top of that, I don't know if that's going to be something that pulls when the regular season starts. Like if it's the starters and then, you know, Sabonis will be the first guy out. That looks like – that did happen again. So that might be something that transfers. But then, you know, mixing and matching, so it's not like a full bench group. I don't know. The full bench group did play again. Again, I don't know. But we'll see. That was all the high-level stuff. He did it. Again, coming from McMillan, this is such a small thing, and maybe I'm just a media guy who is the only person who cares about this, but just that everything he said actually happened made me like, awesome, okay, cool.
Yeah, I'm just excited because it looks like they're going to be – trying some more modern style basketball system, if that makes sense, right? Like, nothing that's like going to be like crazy unique, I guess the right way to put it, but something that's like, oh, they're going to take a lot of threes, they're going to let Sabonis push a little bit, they're going to maybe try to get the ball in Vic's hand a little more, stuff like that. Things that just like you and I would say we should be doing this a little more, that more, but they never actually did because they always played kind of a very like, we play this way and we're only going to play this way no matter what happens, unless we're like forced with an injury to change things up.
Yeah, I agree with all that, but I want to talk about some specific things or guys, really just players that stood out. So let's take a break and then do that. Okay, we have Pacers basketball to talk about. We're going to be covering it all week, previewing games, recapping games, talking about Oladipo. It's going to be a fun week. But this segment here, we're talking about players that stood out to us in the Pacers' very first preseason game. And this is less of a standout, more of a guy I think we just need to talk about because, as I mentioned, the first time he hadn't played since March 10th. Sabonis playing his first basketball since his plantar fasciitis held him out of the entire bubble, and he put up 16 points, 10 rebounds, 16 points, 13 rebounds.
Nine defensive rebounds for him. Yeah, he had a good stat line.
Five of nine on two-pointers. Great, great Sabonis game.
It was good to see him back.
It was.
You forgot. I mean, I don't think we ever forgot how important he was because there were some obvious issues in the bubble.
Well,
that I think
plus nine.
We can definitely contribute to him not being there. I think a lot of that. But it was good to see him back, and hopefully he's not dealing with that plantar fasciitis anymore. I know plantar fasciitis can kind of flare up at random times, but he looks pretty good, and I think he's in for a pretty decent year. Right, he's pretty much improved every single year he's been in the league. If you look at like his kind of arc, it's very similar to what you would expect of sort of a blossoming star in the league, right? You know, come in first, he was out of position, then also in double digit points, and then add 3 points in the more next year and four the next year. And like, you know, if he keeps kind of on that trajectory, he, you know, go from being an all-star to an all-NBA player. Now, I don't know if we'll see quite that just because he's not in like the perfect system for him, but you would expect at 24 and a guy who just, you know, gets better and better that this is going to be another great year for him.
Yeah, I was curious if he'd have a few less touches in the Bjorkgren offense. He did lead the team in shots. Obviously,
I don't think he will. I think he's so...
Well, yeah, we didn't have Warren to really know.
Well, that's true. But he's always... But last year, every offensive action mainly went through him, right? Yep. And I don't think that's going to change. I don't think there's some other... Now, with the difference could be is he could end up not having... I think he took 13 to 14 shots per game. He could take like 12 this year. But maybe his assists go up from... What were they last year? Put up 5 assists a game to maybe 5.5 or 6. So he's getting rid of the ball or making a better pass here or there. But I don't think he's going to have like a lower usage rate, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, and he still posted up a decent amount too, which I was interested in. But let's move on. A guy who did stand out to me. In fact, perhaps the most standout-ish player to me was Brogdon, looking very healthy for, you know, playing in the bubble. We didn't really talk about this, but like some of his struggles could have been coming off COVID, right? He had less time to get in shape, and you know, who knows what kind of impact it had in his body. He looked healthy this game. Who knows how long that'll last given his past, but looked healthy this game. Shot well from deep. The quick trigger style of threes looked to be a good fit for him. 5 assists, I believe, was the second most on the team. Of course, McConnell had an absurd 9 in 20 minutes, but just did very well in the Bjorkgren system. I think Brogdon looked really good.
Yeah, it's with him. If he's healthy, he's a very good basketball player. I mean, yep. Just his issue is, can he stay healthy for, you know, let's say he played 54 last year, 64 before that, 48 games the year before that. So, you know, he misses a good, you know, let's say 20-40% of the year's games, right? I don't think he'll have any different of a season. Hopefully he can be a little more efficient. He wasn't quite as efficient self last year, but I think because we're on a more talented starting lineup with Vic in there, and he'll be less the focal point of the offense a lot of the times. But I guess with me, it was kind of a surprise, right? I expect healthy Brogdon to look pretty good because he's a very high floor player, right?
Yep.
Maybe not the highest ceiling, but he's always every night going to be like, you know, let's say 15 points and 5 assists guaranteed almost. So that's basically what he was tonight. I just hope he can stay healthy. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. Maybe they can play in less minutes. They can give him some nights off, but they've got to figure out how to get him with the right load of man that he can end up playing, you know, up to 72 games, 60 of them would be really ideal for him.
Anyone say that to you? I have two other guys I want to talk about, but I want to let you choose.
I mean, I'm assuming you want to talk about the rookie, right? He was pretty athletic.
He is one of the two. We can do
a couple athletic plays. I mean, obviously you can't read too much into it, but he does look like he's got some nice raw athleticism out there.
I love Bjorkgren already for just saying, you know what, it's a preseason game. I'm going to do the starters except Cash and Stanley at the three. I was like, damn, that's quite the
– Yeah, get him some time.
The move for a rookie coach. Yeah, that Cash and Stanley got to play with the starters in the second quarter, play a bunch of the fourth quarter. We saw him hit a three. We saw him do a high-flying dunk, and that's about it.
Yeah.
The defense was fine, but he didn't really have the ball a ton. I think he'll be used more. Go ahead.
Very Brad Stevens move, I think.
Yeah,
Brad Stevens is kind of where he'll throw in one of his rookies because he understands a long-term development goal, right? So, like, sometimes instead of looking – because Brad Stevens has the length, right? He knows he's going to be a coach at Boston as long as he wants to be basically at this point. And probably right. Bjorkgren will be – has a 4 or 5 year window where, like, he has to develop guys too because, if he can't, you know, McMillan, probably because of the Pacers, the way they set him up, was always thinking, how do I get past this season? Because he was on basically a year-to-year deal and he was, you know, always in the hot seat where, like, when you have a coach who may be thinking, I'm going to be here 5 years, I can play a weird lamp with the rookie who may not be very good, but if I get him a little bit of minutes with those guys, it helped them some reps, and over time it pays off more in the long run.
Right. We got to see kind of both sides of what he might end up doing this year when he was in with the starters, which will probably never happen this year, but
no, but he might get a few minutes with a starter at some point or on a bench, you know, like for if sure. They play a lineup of Sabonis or leave with the bench guys, he might slip in for, you know, a 3 minutes in the second quarter of a game, whatever.
Yeah, he had the Brian Bowen starting in Chicago last year role of stand in the corner. Don't – if the ball's thrown your way, catch it, don't drop it, throw it back to somebody. Yeah. Don't dribble, right? He did fine.
Play some tough defense if you can.
Yep. Fourth quarter, he dribbled a few times and was cutting around the perimeter. He hit that three, I said. That was his first NBA bucket, then had the dunk. He just fit in with that group look. He looked like he played better than, say, Jakar and Sumner in this game. I mean, it's one preseason game, so I'm not going to say he's going to fit better or be better than those guys. Excuse me. But, yeah, he played better than them in his first game. So, yeah, he is one guy I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so who was your other one?
Keelan Martin. Keelan Martin looked great.
Yeah, I mean, is this just a factor of playing against the Cavs and a bunch of also, you know, like basically their second and third string is like fourth and fifth string on most teams, or what do you think was his success, I guess?
Well, the Pacers, so the Pacers were up like 10 or 12 with their actual rotation in the third quarter. Then they played the D team. I don't even know what to call what they played in the fourth quarter.
I mean, right, the Cavs starting five.
The Cavs had Okoro in there at the end and Garland and Chetty, right? They had their starters.
Any of the Cavs starters start for the Pacers?
Kevin Love would, right?
Okay, you're right, Kevin Love would. That's the only one, though, yeah. That's the only one, though. And then, like, off their bench, because I'm not sure any of their bench would even crack the Pacers' rotation. So we're talking, like...
Would, but that's it. I agree.
So then you're talking, like... So their third string is, like, a fourth string, where the Pacers are fifth string, even, and so on.
Right. But, they had some starters at the end of the game. But, yeah, Keelan Martin looked like the best player of that entire quarter for the Pacers. Better than Jakar, for sure. Better than Sumner, McConnell played pretty well with his passing, but probably as good as McConnell, better than McDermott in that quarter. He looked really good. He hit some big threes. And something that you just notice sometimes when guys are popping as they move really well, or like they cut at good times, or their movement looks smooth and no wasted motions. And he had a lot of that to me. He was on the media stand today. He said it was nice to play, and it was weird that, you know, he played for the Timberwolves last year, right? They didn't go to the bubble. So he, like Sabonis, hadn't played since March. So that was his first game in 9 months, and there was no stands. So he was like, or no fans. He said that was just the weirdest game for him. But he looked pretty good, and he's one of the guys fighting for a roster spot. I mean, he has an advantage in the form of a partial contract guarantee, but his first actual game action to show that he deserves a spot, and none of the other guys who are fighting for the spot played, so that also looks good for him, but he played well.
Yeah, can we also say how just bizarre it was playing in a basketball game with no fans in the stands? I mean, I know they played the bubble, but they didn't have
there was no like seats in the bubble.
Yeah, well, they did such a good job with all the like the jumbotron-ish,
yeah,
right? But like, may look like there was like something going on. Like, it is just, I mean, football, you don't notice it because they don't really show the same in football, right? Baseball, you kind of do when somebody hits a home run or a deep fly ball, but basketball, I mean, it's just staring at you the entire game.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's
the thing that made me laugh. I'm trying to find exactly what he said. But the Cavs were doing like their pregame introductions on Fox Sports Cleveland. And the PA guy goes, "All right, fans, get on your feet." And I'm like, "What? Why?" And then he did the whole starting lineup introduction. Then he's like, "One more time, Cavaliers fans, make some noise." I was like, "I get that you're trying to make it feel genuine, but this feels silly."
Yeah, well, it's like half the time the announcers will make some kind of like football today. They were like, someone's like returning to his home fans to to show him up, whatever. It's like then they always catch him and say, "Well, they're home team because they're not playing with any fans or whatever." It's just like not having the fans is such a bizarre experience.
Yeah.
General.
Nobody else was like so awesome or terrible in either direction that I think we need to spend forever being like, "I was so surprised by this." I do want to talk about Vic a little bit just because his health status is going to be important this season, and we can end with him. We'll probably talk about Vic after every game, honestly.
Yeah.
Missed all four of his threes, but like I said with Keelan Martin, he moved really well. He had a really crafty, nice layup in the first quarter. Blew up a DHO. That was something he did a lot in the 2017-18 season. He was awesome on defense. So early signs, looks okay. If he hits 1-3, right, we're talking about a 9.4 rebound, 1 assist game in 20 minutes where he makes half his shots. I mean, that's a good game for him.
Yeah, he looks more athletic than he did in the bubble. He looks a little bit more put together, I guess is the right way to put it.
Yeah.
Like he's been working on his game, shockingly enough, having, some real, I think with him, I think the reason he probably didn't want to play in the bubble is because he knew he wasn't quite there, right? He didn't quite have the like the training and the time to basically, because of the pandemic, probably hurt his process forever it was, right? He probably had to stop training for a month or two or doing whatever to get to the level that he wanted to. But he does look like because his biggest problem in the bubble was his dribble was not
his like handle there was awful. But, he had a lot of turnover.
He couldn't connect with his body, the ball, and the rim half the time. Like, right. It was all like he would like have the speed, but then he'd get the ball knocked away, or he wouldn't have the speed and have the handle, but then he couldn't get to the rim with enough space, whatever. And this time he looked like he was just more like his normal athletic self. Like, I didn't,
right?
Like, watch him. If you told me he hadn't been hurt, I would have said, "Oh, yeah, that's a Vic in a normal preseason game or whatever."
Yeah, right?
So that's the thing. I mean, he obviously isn't quite as athletic. I mean, you can go back and look at some of the highlights. I mean, he was like, I mean, his 2017-18 season, he was just like overpowering athleticism over teams, but he does look like he's getting back to that level at least, which is a good sign.
Right. I would harp on the turnovers, but the Pacers again had a bajillion of them. Everybody, it's preseason.
Preseason game.
You don't know the plays.
A lot of risk.
They don't know the plays.
A lot of risk.
So, yeah, a lot of promising stuff. I did notice of all the rotation guys, right, who are going to play during the season, Vic had the third fewest shots. Everybody shot more than him except for Aaron Holiday and TJ McConnell. That is something. But like, yeah, I don't think it matters. I'm just gonna watch it.
I think that's more Vic preserving himself than anything, right?
That's
more him feeling like, I don't need to go out here and give 100% right now, or I don't need to like burn my body out in 21 minutes in a preseason game. I know I only have so many minutes in me that can really play at a high level. I've got to kind of like hold them back for when it matters, if that makes sense, and let the other guys kind of show off because I've already had my moment, right? Vic isn't like, he's not really. At this point, I mean, he's out to prove something, but he's not going to prove anything in a preseason game where I think everybody else, whether Sabonis just feeling good about playing game 5 to 9 months or some of the rookies just wanting to get shots up and stuff like that, or some of the younger players, I don't know. I think I understand. I think they probably told him, "Hey, let's just ease into the season. Let's not like, you need to come out crazy in the first preseason game against a team. It doesn't matter."
In true Pacers fashion,
the man they just signed for 3 years, $18 million, Justin Holliday, plus 16, just the glue machine. They lost by 19 with him not on the court in this game. Maybe that speaks more volumes to how good he is, but he looked like Justin Holliday from last year, hit a lot of threes. But we got to move on to see what stuff we're going to be watching for in their next game against the Cavs, which is, it's Monday, so tonight we're going to be looking forward to that. So I'm going to take a quick little break and do that. But first, I want to talk to you guys, of course, about Built Bar, because Built Bar is making the best tasting protein bars ever, and they have 18 new awesome flavors now, which are even more delicious-er than their original flavors. So they now have caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp to go with their 12 original flavors. All of their bars are 100% covered in chocolate. They're soft and easy to chew, and they're great for the health conscious guy. They're great for losing and maintaining weight, and they're delicious. So it's a good way to just have a nice snacky treat, or even you can even use it to supplement a meal, depending on what kind of diet thing you're doing. If you like stats, for example, the coconut almond one has 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. Right now, go to builtbar.com, use the promo code locked on, all one word. You'll get 20% off your next order with the promo code locked on for 20% off at builtbar.com. Okay, they're playing again tonight, Adam, and Bjorkgren already did his Sunday media. Actually, it was a few hours ago because it's kind of late for us, but he did mention that he's expecting similar minutes for most of his guys in that game. It seems like the Pacers are being pretty conservative with how much they play guys. I think that he kind of hinted at that Goga could be ready for this game, so that might shake things up a little bit, but I would imagine we're going to see a very similar rotation with perhaps infused Goga. But outside of Goga, what stuff are you watching for in the next game that we didn't really get enough of in the first game?
I think number one thing is, can Fick make a three finally? this is like a hope of mine. You know, I like watching. I just like to see Sabonis with the ball in his hands more. They keep doing that. I'm excited to see every time they do that with him and just the Turner things, right? Both of them together. I mean, it's fascinating to see how a coach who maybe is more modern, I think he utilizes probably the Pacers' two most, maybe their best defensive player and their best offensive player in ways to keep engaged in the game at times.
Yeah, Sabonis was the team's leading scorer. Turner was third. Brogdon, also had 16 tied with Sabonis. So they both did a good job fitting in with Bjorkgren's system. The big thing, we didn't even talk about this when we talked about the threes, is they combined for 17 free throw attempts. The Pacers as a team averaged like 19 per game last season. They got 30 up in this game, and that's also a product of the way they were playing. But, yeah, I'm looking, just going to be watching more about their interactions together. They had some fun double drag screens with those two big men setting screens for guards. I'm going to be watching more of those. But a guy I'm going to be zoned in on is Aaron Holiday, because who knows how long this TJ Warren thing is going to linger, right? We learned on Friday, I believe, maybe Thursday, that his plantar fasciitis injury, which remember we learned he had in the bubble that he played through, is back, and he's week to week, right? So he's probably going to miss the entire preseason. I guess he could be back by the 76ers game, but why the hell would they, you know, why play him preseason game? So we might not see Warren this whole preseason, and who knows if he's week to week, how long this could last, how long it could drag in the season. So Bjorkgren did say Aaron Holiday has impressed in training camp, which is why he rewarded him the starting spot. And, you know, we saw Aaron do well with this group in the bubble, in the regular season part of the bubble at least. So I'm going to be watching Aaron Holiday a lot, see if he can fit in with this group and establish himself as a starter, because it's a big season for him. And if he can prove it in the preseason that he deserves this spot, that'll be huge for him.
Yeah, if he has a good season, he's looking at a nice big contract.
Yeah, he's extension eligible next summer. He is probably very excited to
have. Yeah, because right now, maybe because his youth and some kind of, like, what he kind of showed him, would he crack $10 million a year right now? Get close.
He'd be close,
right? Because he isn't quite consistent enough to like really deserve that. But you might, with his youth, be like, let's give him
the thing. Is at the point of $10 million a year for most rookie extensions, they would just be like, I'll get that next year. You know what I mean? Like, there's no way Aaron's gonna do his third and fourth season and have his value go down. So,
yeah,
he would just turn that down.
I'm with you there. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to establish himself as a starter. I don't think he's good enough yet. But yeah, I think he could establish himself as like a reliable sixth man, as a guy who is ready to just kind of step up when a moment's coming. Because I mean, I think he'll start more games, especially if he stays healthy all year, more than we maybe want. Right? Let's say 10 for Brogdon, 10 for Oladipo, and then maybe like another 10 or 12 for Warren if he misses. Right? So he'll end up starting 30 to 50 games.
Yep. Well, and you know, he probably won't finish games, right? We've talked about McDermott and Justin potentially being better fits, but it gets him more minutes if he starts. He can, And I like that, you know, they're all kind of combo guards, Aaron, Vic, and Brogdon. So you get enough of wing skills there for them all to work together. It's good enough. They were all positives together in this game. The starters, I believe, were a plus one in their, like, 9 minutes, whatever. They didn't play enough for it to matter. But now I'm going to be zoned in on Aaron and see how well he can fit, because he played fine. You know, he had a lot of turnovers and missed a lot of shots, but none of his shots were bad looks, and his assists were really nice. And, he clearly was reading the game well. It's just, he's got to make some shots. Like, this happened last season, too. He missed a ton of shots early in the season.
Yeah, I'm with you there. In terms of, like, Cassius Stanley or anything, is there anything with looking at with Hammer kind of down the lineup?
No. I don't think he's going to play when the season starts, right? So I guess I just – he, you know, he gave himself a C. He did media today as well, him, Keelan Martin, and Bjorkren. He said in his initial performance he'd give himself a C. He's very critical of himself, and he thought that his ball screen coverage was not very good. I need to watch some film and see what he's talking about, but I think that's very interesting that a rookie would come out and say that. So I guess that's something to watch, right? How does he handle screens and the bigger bodies and speed of the NBA? Because one of the things is he can be – he's okay on D at Duke. He was not bad, right? So can he become an okay wing defender in the NBA? That is huge for his projection as a player. So I guess that's a good one. I will be watching Cassius Stanley's defense.
Yeah, I think just in general, anytime he plays, it's worth watching to see what he does. Because he's young and you want to see what he can do. I mean, my idea is of what he can develop into, but you don't really know until you watch him play some minutes. And I think this might be the most minutes we see for a while. You know what I mean?
Yep, and I think the last one for me is, what just general adjustments do I see or do they make? Because, one, I want to see what Bjorkren thinks from game to game, right? They can watch film and change stuff. But two, there's going to be a lot this season, and again, I'm excited about this. I've talked about this a lot of, you play the same team twice in a row in the same location. So adjustments will be very crucial this season, right? McMillan would not have had a good time. But, yeah, you'll have to adjust from game to game to keep an advantage on an opponent you just beat, or to gain an advantage in this case on a team that just beat you. So I'll be curious what stuff Bjorkren does differently, you know, maybe who plays more, who plays less, what kind of actions we see more of, just to get a feel for what I can expect from him when the games count.
Yeah. I guess, right. I mean, they're just doing this game too, partially. It's kind of back to back thing in a way to get the COVID protocols done too. Right. That's part of it.
Well, each team has one home game for COVID protocols. I think the 2-1 market thing was to just see how that looks, basically.
Right. I mean, just because they're going to play a lot of games like this, right? And they're going to play either on the road or at home, back-to-back at the same team.
Yep, all the time.
That's going to be interesting. I mean, to me, just to kind of – because you're going to have to – because it's going to make it a little more playoff-like, right? Because instead of it being kind of where you get a new team every night where nobody's – where you're kind of practicing for the team, but sometimes you're not necessarily like – you're just trying to run your system and hope to beat the team. Now there might be an opportunity to really kind of like play once, see adjust. And so how does that work for both sides? So I don't think it matters that much in the preseason game, because I think there'll be teams trying to hide what they're going to do in the regular season. But it is interesting to see, do you make a lot of adjustments? Do you make some slight ones? What do you do if you lose a game or win a game? Like they lost the last one technically, but I think that sort of doesn't really matter. They won the minutes they wanted to win. Let's put it that way in this game.
Yeah, I'm excited. I like that basketball is back. I like that we are talking about an actual game and not just speculating what things might look like anymore.
Yeah, I'm with you there. We are now 9 days versus Monday to the start of the regular season, which is very exciting.
Yeah, this week we won't harp too much on preseason, but you know, we'll see what we've learned about this Pacers team, talk about the 76ers, do all the fun normal bells and whistles of regular season, and we'll take our last day off, scheduled day off probably tomorrow, and then we'll be going, you know, talking preseason, talking Oladipo this week, and then next week the game starts. So get excited, everybody.
Yeah, I'm certainly excited.
Me too. The first game got me pumped. I am really excited. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. We always tweet out all the shows and sometimes mailbags when we need your questions and topics. You can follow Adam at FriedmanM5 and me at TEastNBA. That is all for today's podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you Wednesday.